WD, we change the picture on the card every year.
We will.
Cool. You make like collector cards out of it. So people keep them.
And we sent a card to everybody in the army at one time.
Still needs a ballot. If you do, please come get it now, and if you've got a ballot, please go ahead and fill it in. It's okay to have your eyes open when you make the choice. Okay, so while everybody is still finishing their ballots, I'd like to pass around the card. As many of you may have heard, old Ed Pearson had a stroke a couple days ago and is hospitalized in serious condition, not life-threatening now, but he will be impaired for a while, has to go through a lot of therapy. It's not a good thing. So old Ed is not here with us this time. We hope he'll be able to come back to NARAMS in the future, but right now I would like to pass around a clipboard with the Get Well card for his friends here in the NAR to sign. So as we're doing the meeting, if you could please sign this card. The card has the two sections you see, and then there's more space back in the back, which we will probably need. So say whatever you'd like to old Ed. He could use some cheering up at this point. I'll go see him after I get back. Okay, as they normally say at meetings, silence your cell phones, please. Okay. Okay, are there any further ballots to be turned in?
Yeah, there's two right here.
Okay. So while that transaction is done, I'd like to shift gears and we'll shift to the informal part of the meeting. The formal part of the association meeting will be in recess until the ballot counting is complete. Okay. Okay. So I put a handout at everybody's place. I could have brought a projector and a computer and projected PowerPoint. That's the life I live in the Pentagon. I don't choose to live that life when I don't have to. But I am fluent in PowerPoint and I'm comfortable writing in it, so that's what you got in front of you. So it's just a way to, whatever that is. All right, it's Naram now. Vernon Gleeder here. Expiration date on life members cards doesn't really mean a whole lot. If you're still standing, your membership's still good.
Just a question, when did the membership from the membership cards come out for life members?
They were in the same blast mailing that just came out. Yeah, I got mine Friday, right before I left home. Yours should be there when you get back.
Right. Those are yours.
Okay, let's talk for a while. So it's been my real pleasure and privilege to be the NAR president for the last 4 years, and it's been my custom while I was the president to talk a little bit about what's going on in our NAR at each of the NARMs, and I do this as well at NARCON because we have a town hall meeting, not an association meeting at NARCON. And I want to give you, the members, some feedback on how we're doing and what are the things that still concern me, what are the areas that I think should be the organization's priorities for my successor. But I'll continue to be a loyal, committed member, and I'll be running TARC, so I'm not disappearing just because I won't be the president. The first part, how are we doing, is really well. We have 5,400 members, 5,410 tonight. Long ago, we set a goal of getting to 5,200. By now, I'm 52. It took us a little longer, but then we went past it. And we're up at 5,400 now. That's 1,000 more than we were 3 years ago. It's more than we have ever had in our history. That didn't happen by accident. It happened because everybody in the NAR turned to and contributed in a variety of different ways, but everybody had a role and everybody did their role. And as a result of that collective effort, we've achieved what we set out to achieve. We need to keep going. 5,400 has brought us levels of service and revenue that we could only dream about 3 or 4 years ago, but now they're a reality. And the Board of Trustees is committed to distributing the revenue from that additional dues income and to making the services of the NAR perfect. We're a volunteer organization, so there's always imperfections when you rely on volunteers who have life intersections, but we are, in most cases, not cash limited by the kind of services that we can offer. We are more limited by volunteer capacity to execute the programs that we can afford to execute. The things that contributed to that growth were hobby shop flyers, member recruiting bonuses. We still are paying $5 of recruiting bonus to any member who recruits a new member, brand new member, and where that brand new member, when they join on the website or when they fill out their paper form, says so-and-so recruited me. We pay that out every 6 months, and it's generally well over $1,000. We get a stack of $5 bills. Start throwing them in envelopes with a spreadsheet that says how many go in that guy's or gal's envelope and how many go in this one, and send them out with a thank you note because that's part of how we grow. Word of mouth is the best way to grow. We have a similar bonus program for participating hobby shops. We have kit stuffers in the kits of every manufacturer that packages kits in the United States, and we will soon have them in every manufacturer's kits regardless of where those kits are packaged. So that will help. We've got great publicity from the manufacturers with links on their websites. The manufacturers have played a very significant role, and we deeply appreciate what they've done. But the individual members have as well, and it's because everybody's been doing that that we've achieved that level of growth. We're up at about 5,400. We're plateaued there, have been there for the last 3 or 4 months. So to kick it up to the next level, to grow beyond that, we're clearly going to have to do some new things. I'll talk about a couple of those. Because we're at that level of membership, our fixed costs of the organization are covered by the first
depends, 4,500, 4,800 members. And so we can offer new services at any time when we're above that level. Well, we've been progressively adding services, more pages to the magazine, the new membership cards that you've seen, and other services that we wish we've had for a long time, but now we can afford to have. So that's the way we've been converting the additional membership into services so that even more people are attracted to be part of our NAR. Our magazine is first rate. It is the only regularly published magazine left in the hobby. Rockets is a magazine, but it's not regularly published, and nor is it available in newsstands anymore. Ours is. It's published with machine-like regularity every 2 months on time, thanks to Tom Beach and Todd Schwab. Someday that stack of magazines by Tom's computer is going to be high enough that he says it's time, but fortunately that won't be on my tenure. So, thank you. Thank you, Tom. Yeah. Knock it off. Okay, so one of the ways that we're improving our services is to increase the length of the magazine. Well, Tom was sort of living on the edge there at 48 pages, you know, just barely enough content to fill 48 pages with good stuff. We've now upped the ante to 56. He needs help. He needs people to write articles of substance, not just launch reports. Those are easy. Reports that say how to do something or how you did something, or technical reports that explain some aspect of the technology of the hobby in detail that others could share and learn from. He needs that kind of content, and we're paying for it. We're paying $250 for up to two articles, feature quality articles, not launch coverage, but how-to kind of articles in each issue, and giving away one or more free NAR memberships to authors of a couple of other articles. But that has not resulted in a large uptick in article submissions. We need help. We need you to actively go out and recruit people who have done something cool, built something good that others should see, and that person should be proud to show off, and write them up. Submit them. We need the content to keep the magazine at the level that we can afford to deliver. We have outreach programs. Almost everybody in here is involved with the Team America Rocketry Challenge, TARC. It's now in its 11th year. In 10 years, it has been just an astounding success for the NAR and for the hobby and for the aerospace industry, and everybody's very happy with it, and it is continuing without any remission or anything. All the sponsors are continuing to be happy and satisfied, and as far as I can tell, the NAR members who are out there mentoring, and there are so many of you, and it's so important to this program's success, you still enjoy doing it. So we're going to keep doing this. Someday it may run out, but I hope that day doesn't come, because it has been just a remarkable turnaround in the access that our hobby has had to aerospace industry people. They're aware of us, to schools, high schools that just didn't have rockets before, and now they do. And so there are sustained programs at hundreds of high schools across the country that just weren't there 10 years ago. So it's been a big win for us. It's taken all of our efforts to make it happen that way, but it has happened. We have partnership agreements with 4-H, which has resulted in some increased knowledge of the NAR and that very large organization. We're working on signing similar agreements with Civil Air Patrol and potentially with Air Force Junior ROTC, both of whom have big organized rocket programs not involving the NAR, but they're open to change and aligning with the NAR. And of course, the NASA Student Launch Initiative. The NASA Student Launch Initiative is a program where we're not partners the way we are in TARC, but we are service provider to NASA for running the Student Launch Initiative launch, which is a fabulous program for young people doing high power rockets with the scientific payload that they have to design. A rigorous design, build, test cycle overseen by NASA engineers and panel reviews of the product. Running the program is a lot of work, and certainly the NAR has taken that in as one of our capstone national programs, and we're putting a lot of work into it. That work's been led by John Lingdahl. Is John hiding here somewhere? Or, there he is, way back in the back, as is his custom. In fact, we've been so impressed with the success of the SLI program and the phenomenal work on behalf of the NAR that John has done with that program that I'm going to present John with the NAR President's Award for 2012. John, come on up.
Thank you.
one never seeks the limelight and he embarrasses easily. Perfect. And he does great work. He personally machined the high power pads that they use for this thing, for example. And there are plenty of other examples where John has really made this happen. So let me move on to what my priorities have been. Over the 4 years that I have been the president of the NAR, and throughout my entire tenure in any leadership position in the NAR, my number one priority has been safety. We are one serious accident away from losing this hobby. We cannot have that accident, that fatal accident. We've had some accidents, but they haven't been fatal. The climate is likely to change significantly if we ever do have one. These are preventable. And while it's true that high-power rockets have more energy than model rockets and they are generally a higher hazard in flight, the one near closest to fatal accident that's occurred in the hobby, completely outside the NAR, was with a model rocket, X-15 plastic model. So even model rockets can be dangerous. We can never let our guard down. You always have to pay attention to the trajectory that that rocket might follow if nothing works the way it's supposed to. And you need to make sure that safety inspection and pre-flight inspection and attention to safety is part of our culture. It very much is, but anybody can have a bad day. We just can't have a bad day about safety. Pay attention to it. The climate concerning safety in our organization is good, and because it is so good, our insurance rates are pretty modest. I wouldn't want to compare with other organizations, but they're less than half as much as our competitors pay. So, and that's because we're safe. What we do is safely done, and we have a great reputation when the insurance company risk adjusters look at us. We're doing it right. Wherever they go, they find that's what we're doing. My second priority has been to make the NAR bigger, because when you're bigger, you can start to afford things that represent outstanding service that are self-sustaining. When you deliver that kind of service, more people join, and it just grows and grows and grows. And so that's why I've pushed us to get larger. We're at about the critical mass now where we can afford significant services, and that's what we're delivering. As we get even larger, we can start perhaps professionalizing some things that have been purely volunteer up to this point. That would be wonderful. AMA, by the way, 100,000 members, has a 50-person paid staff. We have one, and everybody else is a volunteer. So as you become larger and larger, you can pay money to people to do some of the work that is currently being done for free when people can afford the time. So that's probably the next step for us, but that's a ways off. We're going to have to get quite a bit bigger before that happens. The other part of that priority of making us bigger is to make us bigger the right way. We need more young people in this association. I think because Estes is reinstituting the Kit Stuffer program immediately, you'll start seeing them in 2013. We're going to start getting juniors that we haven't seen before since the Kit Stuffers went away 20 years ago. But we need that. And one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about TARC is that it represents paying forward to the next generation, motivating young people who may fade from the hobby for a decade or so as they complete college and whatever, but they will come back, and we need another generation of born-again rocketeers to reprime the pump and keep it going. Otherwise, we're going to look like the AMA, a bunch of older people out on the launch range with no younger people around. That's not who we should be. That's not what we were founded to be. And it takes concerted effort of recruiting and inspiring people of all ages to make sure that that's not what we've become. We are not a model rocket organization. We're a hobby rocket organization. So we span the spectrum from 8th A to level 3. We don't go outside NFPA's confines. There's no NFPA code for EX. But there's an NFPA code for high power, and we fly up to its limits. So in our membership, there are less than 500 competitor flyers, and there are 2,500 high-power flyers. We are a full-spectrum rocketry organization, and one of my priorities has been to convey that message and to make sure that our services, reflect that balance, where we're not just serving the model rocket part of our organization, which is huge, important, and that's where we were founded, but serving as well the high-power part. So I've tried to balance delivery of services across the whole range of rocketry, and tried to make sure that the content that was sent to Tom was balanced as well, so that our magazine represents the full spectrum. And so Tom has done a great job of finding that content that represents the upper end of the power scale in that spectrum to give us a balanced magazine. So another priority has been communication. We've done a bunch of surveys during the time that I've been president. That's your way of telling the board what you want. They've been phenomenally effective. They have truly changed the direction that the board has chosen to go. So we're very much into listening to you, and then through the electronic rocketeer that Mark Bundick established, and he put the first issue out right at the end of his tenure, and I've put out 48 of them since then. I love that technique. It really lets me communicate real time to a large slice of the NAR. We send it to the 4,500, there are 5,400 NAR members, there are 4,500 different email addresses. Some families, all persons use the same address. That 4,500 different addresses that don't bounce. And about half of those people open it when it's sent to them. That open rate is phenomenal. I've showed it to a couple of people from other organizations and their eyes just bug out. It's like you get 50% of your people to open anything you send them. Holy cow. Yeah, the norm is 10 or 20%, and it's 50% for us. So clearly the members are reading it. I can see from the head nods around here. Pretty much everybody here reads it. It's a great way to communicate. And another priority has been providing support to sections. That one's harder because every section's different, so it's hard to come up with a single program other than the safety grants, and I'll talk more about that. That's been a pretty good one. But then each thing beyond that for each section tends to be a little different and unique to that section, so we're still working on how to do that better. I said at the beginning of my tenure my priorities were to be safe, have fun, and pay forward. If we're not safe, we lose the hobby. If we're not having fun, the hobby loses us. If we don't pay forward, there won't be a future. That's why I picked those phrases, and that's truly what I believe. And in that order of priority, that's the way we have to behave as an organization. So what am I concerned about? Well, this is a heads-up flight. Everybody stand up. Why are you flying that? Yeah, come on. So really, you should think about what you're about to do before you fly something that concerns you, and if you haven't looked at it enough to know whether you should be concerned, then you should look at it before it flies to know whether you should be concerned. Now that's more true of high power than model rockets. You can certainly back off far enough from a model rocket that there is no way, no matter what it does, it can hurt anybody. Hard to do that for a high power rocket. But still, despite our tremendous culture of safety, there are still people who get launch fever and just let's fly it. It might not work perfect, let's fly it and find out. That's not the right way to do business. And if we keep doing business that way, we're apt to lose on the law of averages there and end up with a serious accident that we have to start explaining to our insurers. As I mentioned before, we're not getting enough young people into the NAR. We're doing a little better. TARC has helped a little bit, maybe 100 on the average, because they join for a year and then they move on, typically. So our average level is up maybe 100 in the junior leader category, mostly leader. But the juniors is still down around 600, and it's sort of plateaued down there. That's not nearly enough people. So we need to think of ways to attract more juniors into the organization, and we're working on that, and I think the kit stuffers that Estes will be putting out will help. One of the things that the board concluded at our meeting here is that a suggestion from Randy Bodway, that we offer a free junior membership, basically a coupon good for a free junior membership to each section president. You decide, you know, who to give it to. Give it to the kid whose family won't give him the money or her the money to join the NAR, but they're passionate about rocketry. They're with us for a while. Here, be a member of the NAR. So we'll be doing that. That's one small step. That'll get us maybe 100 juniors, then they have to renew. But lots of steps like that. Several sections sponsor junior members' memberships, at least the first year of them. It takes something to get young people over the hump to join. Even though the price is only $25, and that actually doesn't quite cover the actual cost of membership, so we're technically losing a dollar or two on junior and leader members, but we need them so badly that we're not raising those dues. We need the young people. We're offering the membership essentially at cost for the magazine, the card, and the guidebook. We also don't have enough younger adults, people who are at the first level of coming back type born-again rocketeers, the young parents who committed to rocketry maybe because their kids like it, but they're engaged in it as well. That next generation of leaders who might be standing up here in 10 years or 15 years, most of the people who are likely to be standing up here over the next 5 or 10 years are not a whole lot younger than me. So we need to prime the pump in the leadership roles, and that comes from younger adults, so we need them too. So we need a balance of members across the whole age spectrum in our organization. We don't have enough sections. We peaked at 127 on April 5th at renewal. We always drop down as sections take their time renewing. We need more than 127 sections. And there are whole areas where there are NAR members or where there are big cities where we don't have a section. Why not? So we need more sections in order to provide the kind of service that causes a NAR member to stay a NAR member. They don't join to get the magazine and nothing else. They join to get the magazine and to fly with people and to have a launch site. And they don't have a group to fly with and don't have a launch site run by that group, they're not likely to stay with us. We need more sections. And, of course, we always need volunteers. I've had a really refreshing turnout of volunteers during my time. I've asked for them. I've provided lists. Here's what we need. And a lot of people have stepped up. It's been good. I've truly appreciated all the volunteers that we've had. There's always a need for more, so if there's something that you'd like to do, let my successor know what you'd like to do, and we'll try to match it up with what we need doing. But there's, and volunteers, if you ride them too hard, too long, they burn out. And so even though it may appear that some of the jobs are covered, some of them are covered by people who may have been doing them for a long time and would like a relief. I can see a few faces out there saying, yeah, please. Anyway, okay. So shifting gears again to surveys. As you know, we've taken multiple surveys during my time. A total of 2,000 NAR members have responded between the two big all-member surveys that we've taken. And most of those were adults, as you'd expect. We got well over 100 pages of free-form text comments, which in addition to the simple scores from the questions, were tremendously interesting and useful, and it really shaped the board's thinking. On the board, we read every word that everybody writes on their surveys, because that's you talking to us. And we can't go around every place all the time and talk to all of you in person, but through those surveys, we've been able to hear hundreds and thousands of voices of the members. And that truly changes our thinking and focuses the direction that we've been taking our programs. I did another survey a few weeks ago to leaders of sections. We sent it out to about 140 section leaders, president or senior advisor, got answers back from about 120 of them. Awesome. Incredible survey results. That was specifically focused on recognition programs for sections and service programs for sections. Tremendously influential input that we used very much in this most recent board meeting. So, I guess from all those surveys, I've gleaned a few things of what people really want us to do better at, and those have been the priorities that the board's pursued. More support to sections. We're still struggling. We've done a bunch, but we need to do more. We know that. We need to find out what those things are that would really provide the kind of support sections need. We need to do better at supporting sections' efforts to gain and maintain launch sites. Lots of that has to be done at local interpersonal levels, but some of it just takes resources like safety material. That is, in fact, on our website, but it's kind of hard to find, so we need to do better at organizing it. We need to redo the website, and then Bruce Canino stepped forward and said, I'll do that, and so Bruce has done that. Sometime this fall, the new website will come out. It won't start looking a lot different than the old one looked, but the whole software architecture behind it is completely different, so that many different people, different volunteers, committee chairs can get into their part and update their content, so it will become much more current than the website is today, where all the updates have to be done by one webmaster. So that's the first step, and then after that, improvements in architecture and style. But Bruce has put a lot of work into it, and thank you, Bruce. Appreciate it. So let me talk about what the board has done over the last two meetings, because we met recently, in fact, at NARCON out in Hutchinson, Kansas. What a wonderful venue the Cosmosphere was for a NARCON. How awesome. I mean, you wouldn't think, you know, Kansas for a convention. The Cosmosphere for a convention, yeah, absolutely. That was a great convention. So we had a board meeting there. That was in April, and we just had a board meeting. So two of them quite close together. So I'll just kludge together what the board decided between those two meetings that's significant. We set some new goals for the organization. Since we busted through the 5,200 member goal, we set a new goal of 5,800 by NARM 2 years from now, 2014. 140 sections. That's not that big a stretch from where we are now. It's another 15 or so sections. So neither of these, 400 more members, 15 more sections, this is doable. It's not doable and automatic. It takes a level of commitment from everybody to make it happen, but we can do this. And if we do, we'll be in a much different place. We'll have sections in places, all the places around the U.S. where there are significant numbers of people, NAR members. And with 5,800 members, we'll be able to, I think, take a significant jump up once again in the quality of services that we deliver. We've increased support to sections. We abolished the section charter fee. Those sections that renewed this year paid a fee for renewal. All sections that have joined as brand new sections this year, and all sections after this year that renew, free, no charge. So that's a big deal. We've approved the terms of a new $10,000 annual section grant program, $250 per section, broadened it to go beyond safety. That is the most important thing, and that will be the top priority for the grants. But the last time we did the safety grant program, Steve Lubliner, safety committee, was running it. We didn't get full subscription for all the money we were offering. So I think that market is fairly well satisfied, and so we need to broaden it. And Randy Bodway came up with some good ideas on additional things that we should support based directly on survey feedback from the sections. We're going to broaden the scope of it to include launch equipment and marketing materials, signs, banners, you know, posters, stuff to market yourself, your section, and the hobby. So those will all be in. Randy is working on writing down the precise terms and filling, you know, the application form and so forth. So that will be up probably in September. But it'll be $250 grants for a much broader range of purposes than the previous grants, and with the application deadline being in November. So that would probably be the kind of program that we'd run in the future. And there will be a new section recognition program for the 2012-2013 contest year, as if section recognition was tied to contests. But these are recognitions that we'll give out at NARA. We went into the recognition program with some ideas of what to do, read the survey, and said, oh, we didn't get that right. So we're going to have to rethink what the characteristics are that we want to recognize in that program based on the feedback we got. So that's what Randy's currently working on. So we thought we would be ready to roll it out, all of its terms, right now. Based on that feedback, we need to do another couple loops to make sure that we're doing recognition for the things that are the right things. So that was another example of where the survey really was useful in helping us make good decisions. As I mentioned, we're restructuring the NARA website. So it will have starting the same content, but much better refresh rate, and then evolving to better content as well. We have started sending a high power certification pin to each person who achieves a high power certification level higher than his previous one. We did a mass mail out of 2,500, 2,600 all at once last spring. I got bad advice from my post office, which is where we did this, and they said the postage is this, and about 10% of the post offices around America disagreed with that, so if you showed up postage due, I'm sorry. But we're putting the conservative larger amount of postage on all the ones that are going out now from headquarters. They should go out automatically when you send in the documentation for a new HPR cert level. You'll get the card and you'll get the pin. Different envelopes from different places, but you'll get both. Art Upton proposed a new high-power rocket science achievement award. Where certain achievements in high-power rocketry beyond level 1, 2, and 3 will be recognized with certificates and publicity. I think those specific areas of achievement will be supersonic flight, proved with some details of how you have to prove it, achieving integer multiples of mile in altitude, 1 mile, 2 miles, 3 miles, and the third one was telemetry. That is, you've telemetered back something other than the state vector of your flying machine, the attitude, altitude, the velocity, but telemetry data of the atmospheric conditions or something else has been telemetered back to the ground from your flight. So those will be the first three achievement awards, and Art will be rolling that program out in the next month or so. We want to recognize high power achievement. We had the high power technology achievement award, but we got a total of 3 applications between the 2 years and none last year. So that clearly wasn't the right type of recognition, so we've done this other alternative instead. And finally, the contest board has decided to eliminate contest sanction fees. So those are the things that I think are significant about the NARA board actions. The next page in your handout is a picture of something that you should all carry proudly, your new membership card. This has been Jonathan Rain's personal project and priority from the board for the past, how long, Jonathan? Months? Yeah, well, a long time. Jonathan has put a huge amount of labor into getting this card designed, created. We're outsourcing it in America to a professional card production operation that produces a batch every 2 weeks. We were producing cards from headquarters previously every 2 weeks. That's no change. It's just this will be coming from a place in Texas, I think.
Dallas.
Yeah. Right. What was that? Okay. Whoever's phone that is, please turn it off. These cards, we sent out a blast card mailing to every person who was a member on July 1st, whose membership expired in August or later. That card that went out reflected your status as of July 1st. If you renewed after that date, the card that you first get will have your old status, but there's another card behind it to 2 weeks behind it that will reflect your actual renewed status. So just everybody chill out until August 15th. All right, if you still have a card that doesn't reflect correct status on August 15th, you have a problem. Until then, please leave Marie alone. So I hope all of you have the card. A picture of it, a black and white picture, which doesn't do its justice, is in your handout. In color, it is gorgeous. It's credit card style. It only costs us 20 cents more to produce and mail this than it cost the old card. This is not a big investment. The old card was ridiculously expensive and abysmal in appearance, and it's been nagging on me for my entire NAR membership history. And I finally was in a place where we had the money to just fix it. So Jonathan fixed it. Thank you, Jonathan. Okay, a couple other developments. ATF, I think I've spoken often, not as often as my predecessor, but I've spoken often about ATF. Bunny's talking to himself right here. And you don't want to hear the words he's using. Courtesy of NAR member, Tripoli member, both Burl Finkelstein, we have a different relationship with ATF. Somehow or other, Burl is on a first-name basis with the middle leadership of ATF. They know him, they like him, they talk, they call, they all go out to dinner together. I don't know how he did it, but he has a great relationship. So he's facilitated a cordial dialogue between NAR, Tripoli, and ATF, where we have reasonable person discussions with them. Now, they operate within limits of the federal system and the Department of Justice. They can't just give us what we want. But they're talking to us, and they're listening to us, and they're trying not to be the ATF that created the lawsuit that they lost because they were arbitrary and capricious. That doesn't mean we're going to get what we want. It does mean that they're not going to just issue edicts that surprise us. We've been trying to negotiate with them to not regulate igniters. Well, igniters are subject to the Organized Crime Control Act of 1970 by law. The term igniter is in there. It is regulated by law. That can't be changed. The definition of what is an igniter isn't in the law. That's a regulation. There is no regulation defining it. So we've been trying to work something out with them where we could define away the igniters we use and leave in there the igniters that people use to light explosives. We've not been able to work something like that out. So we're going to leave it undefined, which is the status quo. That's where we've been. One or two NAR or Tripoli members per year have an ATF agent who looks in their magazine, knows that they can't regulate, enforce against APCP. They get that. Says, you have igniters in there. Igniters are in the book. I'm going to write you a citation because you have igniters that aren't on your record. The other 99 ATF agents look at the magazine and say, yeah, whatever, and leave you alone. So we were trying to fix those random acts that are actually technically within the law, but all once the lawyers at Department of Justice got done with it, all that we could get was a great regression from the status quo. So we chose to say, status quo is better than what you've offered. If you're going to make it official, it's going to be more restrictive than we care to live in. So we just mutually agreed that we will do nothing, and we will intervene where we can. Get your igniters out of your magazines. Just take it out of their face. They don't have to be in a magazine if you didn't buy them through an explosive transaction, which you have to do for electric matches and quick bursts for whatever reason. If you didn't buy it with a LEUP, don't put it in your magazine. If it's not in your magazine, you're not going to have an interaction with the ATF about why is it in your magazine and not on your records. This is easy to fix, but I can't say that on the record in public, in print. Just, we can fix this problem. And I won't be the NAR president after tonight, so, it's not another quarter. Yeah, so it's not an official statement. But that's how you fix the problem. All right, so that's what we're going to have to live with, because what they offered they really honestly were trying to do their best, but lawyers were involved, and the law says, and it was not going to work. So we just said, thanks, but no thanks. We're going to give out Canon teacher grants and scholarships. And Joyce, do you have the list handy? Would you like to come up and read who got those? Well, I'll let her tell you how many people applied, but we have never had applications like this, never had this many before, so it was a tough job.
Yeah, so talk for a minute here, Joyce.
Well, I wanted to thank our judges, many of the judges are in the room. We had 23 Canon applicants and 19 scholarships. and everybody was qualified, so it was really hard to make a decision. And we hope that people that didn't get it will certainly apply next year, and they have a good chance, because they were all really good. So for the canon, we had 8 judges, myself, Roy Hootchin, who's doing the Educator newsletter, Claude Mena, who was a partner with a previous winner, Robert Alway, Jennifer Ashpool, Mark Johnson, and Katrina Moses, and Vince Hughley, many of whom are in here. So let's thank our judges. It makes it easier when you can average 8 rankings and discuss with each other rather than having only 3 when you have this many people. So I'm just going to read the names of the teachers and what state they're from, since none of them are are here tonight, but the full information of them, on them will be on the website. Gary Brandt from Washington, Catherine Brent from Ohio, Alan Cox from Los Angeles, California, Rhonda Cox from Orion, Illinois, Jeffrey Holmes from Memphis, Tennessee, Holly Erickson, West Fargo, North Dakota, Julie Kramer, Sonora, California, Jeffrey Lacoste, Durham, North Carolina, Jim Sauer, Magdalena, New Mexico, and Mike Stanton and Robert Vasquez, a team teaching program from Buena Park, Arizona. So those are our canon winners. Now our scholarship winners, we can see them in the Okay, for scholarship, we had many of the same judges, but we also had some different judges. In addition to myself, we had Tom McAtee, Claude Mena, Robert Alway, Mark Johnson, who's here, Mark Wise, who's here, and Katrina Moses. So let's give all of them thank you. We had seven judges make this decision and rank these people. So those who made the top 10 out of 19, very hard decision, are the following. Blair Cutting, who's going to go to Embry-Riddle University and major in mechanical engineering. She's from Virginia Beach, Virginia.
The youngest level 3 certified rocketeer in history, by the way.
Wow, nice. Okay.
18 years and 2 weeks, I believe.
Wow.
The next person, these are not in any, they're in order alphabetically. Dylan Dickstein from Gold River, California, who's going to Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, California, majoring in civil engineering. The third one is Rachel Caplow from Dundee, Illinois. And Rachel is going to the University of Michigan. She's going to major in theater, design, and technology. The fourth one is Ryan Kinsler of Kingman, Kansas. He's going to Hutchinson Community College, and he came through us through 4-H, and he's majoring in agriculture technology management, so agriculture, basically, agricultural engineering kind of thing. The fifth one is Katie Kosak from Dandridge, Tennessee, and she's at Florida Institute of Technology, majoring in physics and math. Sixth one is Kirsten Ma from Seattle, Washington, going to the University of Washington, majoring in pre-engineering. The seventh is Sean Michael from Avondale, Arizona, going to Embry-Riddle, majoring in aerospace engineering. The eighth one is Eric Stahlkopf from Huntsville, Alabama, going to Mississippi State, majoring in aerospace engineering. And then the ninth one is Brian Smith from Ottawa, Illinois, going to Purdue, majoring in aerospace engineering. And the last one is Harrison Yates from Charlottesville, Virginia, going to the University of Notre Dame, also majoring in aerospace engineering. So let's congratulate all of you.
We have increased the number of scholarships that we award, partly as a result of our larger dues base and larger number of members, and despite that, there are still highly deserving candidates that we couldn't afford to cover. So this is a great program, and Joyce puts a lot of work into it, so thank you so much, Joyce, for what you do to run this program. All right. We'll be giving out $10,000 in section grants, which I mentioned previously, up to $2,200 in R&D prizes, courtesy of Bob Alway, who, by the way, quietly gave us another grant of $10,000, and I don't know that we publicly thank you, Bob, but... That was great. Another quiet guy who embarrasses easily. So much fun.
And we have.
Yep, we love it. We also are giving away, or have given away now, $2,400 in NARAM travel grants, and the young men who've received those grants are up here in the front row, and I think we said hello to them night before last, but hey, welcome. Thanks for coming to NARAM, guys. Come on back. One final development in insurance. We've recently increased our insurance coverage. Over the past year and a half, we've increased it to a $2 million limit per event. We've increased the fire damage to the launch site coverage from the $100,000 it's been throughout our history to $300,000, and we're going to do it again. We're going to raise that limit to as high as the insurance company will let us, and that's they have a hard time doing more than that. I think we're going to be able to get $1 million out of them. We've got to try. They've given us a price quote. So that particular element of our insurance covers damage to the launch site itself or the property of the launch site owner. All of the other $2 million covers damage to people, property, or other things that aren't the launch site, that is, individuals who are on the launch site or surrounding land or anything else. So that limit has been a quiet, kind of an inconvenient limit that's been sitting there for a while, and we've, as we learn more about what it means, we've realized this is a place where we should spend some money. That's going to cost us some money. That's going to be $10,000 more a year so to get that kind of coverage. But, you know, that's the price of liability coverage for something, by the way, that is a real risk. And the insurance company knows that that is a real risk. I think it's important we have it. The board agreed that we should, and we're going to go after it.
Does that cover John Hockheimer's shoes?
No, John Hockheimer's shoes and trousers would be covered under the liability. That's the $2 million. There's a story there. John can tell you after the meeting. So there are two new NAR safety codes out, effective the 1st of August, the high power and model rocket safety codes. The only change in the model rocket safety code was a restriction on the standoff distance. That is a new standoff distance requirement. If you're launching more than 10 rockets simultaneously, that is, they all go whoosh at once. If you're doing them sequentially a few seconds between each, no change. But if you're doing a mass launch, these have hazards that we've come to appreciate as people have done the 1,000 rocket launch, the 2,000, the 3,000. This has got to stop. If you're going to do this, you need to stand off much further, 1.5 times the flight altitude, and that's fine. But we were raining rockets on people. This is stupid. We can't do this. And in high power, the same thing was going on. The hazards there are much higher. And so the threshold for mass launches there is more than 2. So special rules apply. Additional standoff distance is not 1.5 times the flight altitude for high power. In addition, there was a change in the high power code to require that minimum essential people be at the pad once the onboard electronics and pyrocharges are armed. And the rocket can only be armed in that way when it's in the upright flight position. This is the legacy from a really serious accident in LDRS 2 years ago. That wasn't followed, so this is a lesson written in blood. So those are the fundamental changes. There's a change as well in minimum launch site dimensions for people who are flying G motors that are technically high power because they're hybrid or over 80 newtons average thrust, but are in fact just G motors. Those safety codes are in effect on 1 August, and they're based on NFPA codes that took effect on June 18th. So they're completely consistent with and driven by the NFPA codes. I think our NAR is a pretty good deal. $62 dues that haven't gone up in 10 years. You get a great magazine, the only regular magazine in the hobby. Full Spectrum magazine covers all aspects of the hobby. You get insurance that's valid anywhere in the United States, anytime. It goes with you. That is, your insurance covers you wherever you may launch safely in accordance with the safety code, including it covers you at Tripoli launches or wherever you fly. You are covered for your rocket if you fly within accordance with the NAR safety code. Don't let anybody tell you that that's not true, because it is. That's portability. That's a unique feature of NAR insurance. It's also valid in Canada, and it's valid anytime, not just at sanctioned launches. We have high power certification through level 3. We don't do EX. That's not an NFPA recognized activity. We have competition programs both nationally and internationally. The international team, the U.S. team to Slovakia, this departs in 3 or 4 weeks. I'm on it. A number of people here are on it. We're all going to go over and fly for the United States in the Olympics of rocketry in Slovakia or some other obscure corner of East Europe. Which obscure corner it is changes from time to time. The next obscure corner will be Bulgaria. Yoo-hoo. I want to go there the third time. I've been there twice before for the internet. We have family member discounts for your membership, $12 off. And we get a member guidebook. Who can touch that? It's a good deal. Be proud of the fact that you're an NAR member, and don't be ashamed to advertise what a good deal this organization is. I want to do a couple more recognition things, and then we will recognize the results of the election, and I'll have a few closing comments. But the first thing I want to do is to, before we announce the election of who's leaving the board, or who's replacing those who are leaving, is to thank one of those who's leaving, Jennifer Ashpool. Jennifer has been a member of the Board of Trustees for 12 years. Jennifer's done many things, run election from the technology committee. She made the transition of our headquarters to from a standalone Mac, old Mac, with custom unique software that, anyway, we couldn't live that way, to a web-based system called Neon. That was a hugely difficult transition that Jennifer was 100% responsible for. So that's a huge service to the NAR. She certainly deserves this recognition. Thank you, Jennifer.
I also want to recognize a few people who've been loyal members of the NAR for a really, really long time, longer than me. Well, only 1 year longer than me. I've been a member for 49 years. But there are 5 people here tonight who've been a member for 50 years.
Wow.
Yep. So there's a 50-year pin to thank you for your continuous loyalty to the NAR. This is a pin you cannot buy. You can't buy this from NARTS. If you happen to be a 50-year member and you lose one, send a note to the president, because he has the supply and you can't buy it. You can only earn it by 50 years of membership. We can't check, you know, every single minute for the last 50 years, but we can look back at selected points in the records, and wherever we look, these people were members 50 years. I'll do them in NAR number order, but the first is Bill Spadafora, NAR 2097. Second one's Merrill Lane, NAR 2135. Long ago in a galaxy far away, I went to my first NARAM. That was NARAM 10. I learned how to fly boost gliders and trim them. I learned them from Tom Pastrick. He's still doing that to the young men here on the front row. Tom's been a member of the NAR 50 years, NAR 2276. Come on up, Tom. We previously recognized half of the Estes team. Glita, you didn't join quite the same year as Vern. So Glita has a slightly higher NAR number than Vern.
So, Glita, your NAR number is 3067. I may have given you a PIN before, but...
There were some changes back then.
Right. Okay. Nevertheless, you've been a member for a really long time, and we want to thank you for being a member, and thank you for all you've done for the NAR over those 50 or more years. Glita, come on up. And finally, the fifth one that I'll recognize tonight, this is for people that we think joined in 62. The records are really poor, so whether, you know, Jack Kane, NAR 3398, joined in December 62 or January 63, I don't know, but 50 years, close enough. Come on up, Jack. That debate because I'm one year behind him. Are you ready with the results of the election? So I'll recognize the NAR secretary to give us the results of the election to the board.
Hopefully I'll say this correctly. And it's very, very close.
Okay, I'll read them in order of who received the most votes. So So John Lingall received 220 votes, so he will be on the board of trustees. Few votes less, Mark Wise received 207 votes, and he will be on the board of trustees. Okay, number three. This person received 161 votes, Ms. Randy Gilbert. And with only three votes less, 158 votes, so three people made a difference in this election, if you had just completed. Three more people, NAR members, to show up or mail in their ballots. You could have made a difference. So Randy Bogler received 158 votes. So very, very good. Thank you. Thank you.
I wish they could all be trustees.
Joyce, how many votes were placed in advance? Total votes and how many?
Something like 209 votes in advance. That's probably more than normal. That's quite a lot. I haven't done this process before. As the NAR secretary, the 209, more than are here today. I could add up the ones that I got today, but we fit them in three piles. I have to go back them together.
It'll be published, but we don't know it in real time.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me open the floor to questions. I'll have a few comments at the end, and we'll do the obligatory formal closing. But what are your questions and comments about your NAR? So if you have one, raise your hand, then stand up when I recognize you and say who you are, as if I didn't know, but your other peers here might not. All right? Bob? We know who you are.
When you mentioned the teacher grants and the award winners, is there anything we can do to hook up those teachers that win those awards with local sections in their area?
It is a good question. What we've tried to do is to encourage those teachers to give us reports that we could publish and to post the results of their work on a website that we can link to. It's a good idea, though, to pass their contact information to the nearest section. That would be a good idea.
I can add that to the letter to the teacher.
Yeah, let's do that.
About the nearest NAR section. I'll be glad to do that. Now, whether they contact you is another question.
Yeah.
I could also send their info to the section leader in that area. I'll call them.
Yeah,
okay.
That's a good idea. Thanks. Mark Johnson, did you have a question?
I have an observation rather than a question. I've been attending association meetings. I think I've missed two or three since 1985. This is the first time I can ever remember the proceedings being interrupted by standing ovations three times.
Well,
that's remarkable.
So I like recognizing people, right? Because we are a volunteer organization, and if we don't remember to say thank you, the volunteers will melt away. And so as in all of my years of leadership in the Navy, I've learned the importance of saying thank you and providing recognition. It costs nothing, but it builds the loyalty that you need to sustain an organization.
Sure, quick question about the contest fees and inspection fees. What did those fees support prior to this, and how are we returning, how are we supporting those activities otherwise?
Well, the section fees went into the general fund, and the general fund just doesn't need the money, right? So, now whatever. We just didn't need the money. It was a time, at a time when we needed money from any possible source. We had fees for lots of things. Now we have dues income. We don't need that fee. The contest board fee probably paid for postage or something for mailing results around. That's a reimbursable expense that the NAR board will just pay the contest board. It was a few hundred dollars a year. It's a nuisance. We don't want nuisance fees for people who are doing exactly what the organization wants them to do.
We also have a single email now.
Yeah, right.
Really?
Yeah, you can email contest manager files back when you used to have to shove stuff in envelopes. So this is an artifact. Somebody noticed that, you know, we're doing this. Why are we doing this? Nobody could remember. It was the same story for the high power certification when we had the policy that after you let your membership lapse for a year, you lost your high power certifications, and we had this discussion at the April board meeting of why did we do that? Well, it was to make sure that people renewed. Well, they are. So why are we doing it? Do you have to fly once a year at level 3 to maintain your level 3 the way you would for a pilot's license? No. You could fly once and never do it again and stay level 3 as long as you stayed a member. Why are we doing this? We couldn't think of a reason why, so we said, let's stop. And we did. So that was based on member feedback, by the way, as so many things are that the board decides. Steve?
Yeah, just a Steve O'Meyer, just a question on your charts tonight. You said about teams participating in TARC and SLI covered in section launches. Does that have to be a regularly scheduled section launch? Is that a section representative is present?
It has to be a launch that you run as a section on your launch site. Now, you can get the school approved as a launch site covered by insurance and go there as a section and run a launch there.
But normally what we have is one section representative out there for, say, a qualifications right or something. So there is a section representative on our site, but it's not a normally scheduled section launch.
It's at your regular site, though, right?
Yes.
And it's approved by the section that this is okay.
Yes.
Yeah, you're good. Yeah, you can't go over to their school as a private individual and say, hey, I'm from Novar, and Novar's insurance is covering us today because I'm here, and Novar's never heard about it. Right, so.
Probably more of a suggestion than a question, but is there any reason why we wouldn't take this incredible body of work that we have called the NARAM R&D reports and start publishing them in the magazine? There's a lot of great work, a lot of great
science. So Joyce and Tom go after the R&D authors every year, and how many articles do you get out of your persistent pestering?
Not all R&D articles are worth publishing.
Yeah, right. But I mean, the ones that really are, the ones that stand out that are truly worth it.
Every once in a while, someone comes in.
Right. I mean, there's a huge inertia out there to just write it. I mean, people do cool stuff, and then they just won't take the effort to write it down in a publishable form. And R&D reports, a good R&D report, somebody that takes a top place in R&D, probably has the basis for a good article for the magazine. Would you please write the article? And Tom may get more articles than he can publish. He'd like to be in that position. That's an editor's dream. More good articles than you can publish.
Usually the report as it's submitted is not suitable for an article media.
Or a presentation.
Yeah, it has to be completely reformatted, and that's work, right? So we're incentivizing people to do work by paying them to do the work. We didn't used to do that, but we have the money now to be able to afford to do that, and there's no reason we shouldn't do it. Ed?
Trip, with Bruce rolling out the new website this fall, is there a possibility that we could finally find a way of creating a passworded access to member information so that when we go to contests and events around the country, if we're doing somewhere different, we know a friend of ours is there, we can go in, password our way in and go, here's his phone number or his email, mean, I would like to see more interconnectivity that way. I mean, it's the white pages, and I realize we're all sensitive about our personal information. But can Bruce do it? He seems to indicate he thinks he can, but...
The technology probably exists. It's a policy issue that I'll leave to my successor. Right. There will be a members-only area that you can log into on the new website that will have the same user ID and password that you use to access your Neon account. The systems will be linked. What we put in that members-only area is it's under construction. There'll be a little bit of stuff there, but that's an access, an area that we will not have had before. And so we'll have to figure out the most appropriate use for that area. But the technology will be there to do stuff like that that has not been there before. And then it becomes a matter not of technology limitations, but of policy of, is this the right thing to do? George?
Follow up on the R&D matter of publishing. I would suggest putting up the Lanera website and authors could essentially send their computer files.
Right.
But put it on the site, not as something that's for sale through NARC or whatever, it would be accessible.
Members only area could have many things on it. Once it's established, then there will be really fun board discussions of what is the right stuff to put on there that doesn't cannibalize things that we are, you know, making products out of that we make money on, like sport rocketry. And how far back do you go before you can put one of them up there? Do you ever put them up there? These are choices we've never had before. We do not want to make intellectual property like that that's a huge, valuable part of our corporation available to the general web-surfing public, but now it will be available only to NAR members who are paying us dues and deserve something like that. So, you know, that'll go into the list of things that we could do, and that'll be a fun board discussion once the technology is in place and working, which, you know, that it's web, right? So it's not going to be as quick or as easy as what we said, but it will happen, and it will happen probably this year. And so there'll be really great opportunities in the future, and really appreciate what Bruce has done to find the software that gives us that capability. What else we got? Yep.
John Bates, real quick question. Big supporter of TARC and also a TARC mentor. Is there any data that the association has on how many TARC members actually become, TARC participants become members of NAR? And if not, what can we do to draw those people into NAR? We have several mentors here from PSC, but after the events, we don't deal with people coming into NAR. It's like a one and done thing. We're trying to find ways to bring them in.
We offer group memberships to TARC teams. If the teacher joins at the full rate, the students can join as if they were family members. We don't get a lot. These are heavily committed students who are doing this. In many cases, they do it more than 1 year, but many don't. We're making an investment in the next generation and on betting on the come that 10 years from now, they will come back when they start to have kids of their own. We understand that young people who are finishing high school and going to college, unless you go to a college like I did, MIT, where you could like major in rocket engineering, and there was a rocket club that made it worse. I do remember going to class occasionally at the Institute, but mostly I went to the MIT Rocket Society. But most people don't have that kind of college experience, so they grow away from the hobby during those years. If you could think of ways to incentivize them to a greater extent to be members without just giving stuff away, please pass them to me. Now, I'm going to retain ownership of TARC. I'll be the TARC manager for NAR. So that kind of stuff, if you have ideas and suggestions on TARC, please send them to me, because I want these kids in the NAR, even if only for a year or two, so that when they come back, they can ask for their old number back like so many of you have done.
John Dyer, Dallas Target Rocket Society. We have the same problem that a lot of clubs have. We don't have enough A and B divisioners.
Right.
We try various things with, you know, a little bit of success, but is there a database or a reference that we could go to for ideas and suggestions on trying to get kids to join the NAR and flying competition and, you know, trying to maintain the membership?
No, we don't have a database. We have a couple times during my tenure we have asked members to contribute. How did it work for you? How did you fill in the blank? How did you gain access to your launch site? Please send us your lessons learned so we can put them up on the website and share them. I got two.
We sent another notice out. I sent this out in the E-Rocketeer two or three times. Please tell us your stories of how you got local media publicity. What did you do that caused the local TV station or newspaper to cover you in a favorable way? Please send us your lessons learned. Zippo. So calling for lessons learned, you have to have a person with a passion to go squeeze it out of people. Passively asking to have them sent doesn't seem to work. So you really need a volunteer who's going to make calls and stuff and take an active role. And that was something I said to the board as well in our meeting. This idea of waiting for sport rocketry articles to show up on the doorstep is not working. Would you please go out and bother people? Twist their arms. Tell them, that's really cool. You should write this up. Let me call you in a couple weeks to see how far you're going on your article. We need to be much more active about recruiting people to do the things that are really valuable that need to be shared, because everybody's busy. And so somebody's got to put it at a real high priority and annoy everybody else and, until they contribute. Steve?
Yeah, there is a list, of course, published for showing the TARC mentors. Is there any thought for the educational information to show, call it, for lack of a better term, educator mentors, that maybe they can seek out an R member in the area if they're looking to do a rocketry program or ideas on a rocketry program, that there are folks within the organization they could seek out who will volunteer to work with the schools and classes?
Outside of helping a TARC team, you mean?
Outside of TARC.
Could, yeah. I mean, I'm real hesitant to ask NAR members to volunteer for yet more things. The top priority is to volunteer and don't burn out as a TARC mentor, but if you got more energy, more gas in the tank than just that, certainly let the Education Committee Chair, Vince Hughley, know. Vince has an amazing network of volunteers. The Education Committee is the only committee we have, I think, other than S&T, that has more than five or six volunteers. I mean, people love helping on education things, and Vince finds work for them to do. So that might be an idea.
Well, to address that, we for our 4-H solicitations, when 4-H calls us and says, who can we get to help with the club, I refer them to that mentor list. So really, if you're on a TARC mentor list, you might get calls for people more than just TARC, but then we figure, you know, you want to do that. You know, that you're, it's just another group of kids or schools or teachers that need a person who knows how to put a parachute in an igniter and can take some time to answer some questions. So we're hoping not to burn those people out, but that resource is getting proliferated through other requests. So if you're right. if you're on the NAR mentor list, you're quite a prize.
Right. I'm a little apprehensive because there are many teachers who are what we call needy. That is, they don't know anything about this. They want somebody to come in and just do it for them, right? And that will burn a volunteer out in a heartbeat. One of the proposals that Vince offered us at the board meeting that still needs a little definition, but we're going to go do this, is to develop a program to certify rocketry instructors. That is, certify teachers as rocketry instructors, and they have to be NAR members to get that certification. We could certify other educators, people who do informal education, as certified instructors as well. And it would be an endorsement on your NAR card. That's a program still to be fully developed, but it's coming. Because there's a market out there for having us be part of helping teachers learn how to teach rocketry so that they can have self-sustaining programs and don't always have to import a NAR member to help them.
Joe Holly from Detroit, Ferndale. I just got in here. Would just NAR Trek lead into that? Would NAR Trek be a tool that could be used in that?
Not exactly. NAR Trek is different. NAR Trek is for individual personal skills development of rocketeers. It wasn't designed to be a tool that educators used. It's got the wrong objectives, but something like NAR Trek.
Oh, kind of certify like minimal.
Right. I mean, that idea of having levels of certification and demonstrating certain skills to get them is part of it, but it's a different skill than getting a 30-second parachute flight and the things that NAR Trek calls for. But yeah, I mean, a rocketry instructor thing would be loosely based on high power level 2 or something. You get a checklist, you got a little test or some other demonstration of proficiency. We're working on it. It's coming, but it's not here yet. What else have we got? Bob?
Just a piece of feedback on that. The SLI team that we had up in Woodstock, the kids who were involved with that, they said the most fun they had was when they went to the local school with this big honking rocket and talking to these kids.
Well, the SLI program has as one of its required elements that a team has to do outreach. In addition to building and flying a rocket, they have to do outreach. John, is there a threshold number of events they have to do of outreach?
There isn't, but there is one team that had like somewhere close to 10,000 contacts.
Vanderbilt, yeah. Right. So the SLI, one of the reasons that the NAR has been so relentless in our pursuit of SLI is the leverage there of those SLI teams and their outreach activities as a way to spread news of the NAR and the hobby enormously, leveraging those teams and their required outreach events. That's why the SLI is so much a NAR thing. That's why we've been so determined to make sure that we were working with NASA on that program, because that's who we are, or at least a part of who we are. Tom?
As an active TARC mentor, and I think the other TARC mentors have the same problem, we need to get the teachers and the schools that sign up for TARC, their addresses early enough to contact them earlier.
Yeah.
Too often, we don't find out about them until January, and there's not enough time for them to progress through
or
to need for the qualify.
So,
I understand this is the AI is handling the paperwork on this.
Yeah.
Is there a way to streamline this that we can get contact with those schools quicker?
I can try. AIA had a data system implosion this year. So we were lucky to get the contact information out at all. They're fixing it. In previous years, I've sent it out earlier than I did this year. This year was a fiasco. It'll be better next year. But frankly, 80% of the TARC applications come in the last 2 weeks before the deadline. And Ann Ward, or whoever is at AIA, is just buried for another 2 or 3 weeks after that, getting them all in before there's much of a database to put out. So it's real thin for a while, then suddenly, boom. So it's typically around the 1st of January before that flood of the applications is processed. Usually right before Ann goes on Christmas break, it's finished.
Well,
so,
those that do register earlier.
Yeah, I couldn't get a database earlier this year. In previous years, I've been able to get progressive ones. I could not get one this year. The person, it's a long story. You don't want to know. All right, so partners have to work together, and there are always bumps in the relationship. And that year, this year, that was a bump between us and AIA. I was furious.
Is it possible, at least in the documentation, maybe to suggest to the schools if they're even thinking about the TARC? They're not even necessarily members. I really don't want to burn out the TARC mentors, but if a school is thinking about it, just to understand what they're getting into, is perhaps even contact the mentors, recommend that they contact the mentors in advance of their application if they're on board or might understand what it is.
Right. Okay. We can tune the announcement message for TARC to do that. One of the humbling things that I've learned in TARC is how hard it is to get information out to every school in the United States. I don't know how many different school systems there are in America, but it's probably over 20,000. And they all have different rules, and it is just amazing. There is no single way that you can communicate clearly and have it received the same way you intended it across all of that diverse population. We do our best, but we can certainly incorporate that thought in the message that we send to whoever reads it. Anybody else besides Bob before he and I have a personal conversation? I'm sorry, Bob. I want to make sure I involve everybody, and then I'll stay around for individual conversations. Jack, I haven't heard from you yet tonight.
Well,
I'm surprised.
I had my hand up, you just don't look this
way. I'm sorry.
That wasn't intended that way.
You won't have to worry about that
anyway,
after tonight.
This is a fairly serious question. After the fallout from the LDRS, the recent fallout from the LDRS incident a couple of years ago, we've had a big discussion among our club officers about incorporation to protect club officers from lawsuits.
Right.
Has the NAR board discussed the pros and cons of incorporation? Are we even allowed to do so since we're under your umbrella to start with?
Well, you're allowed to. Whether our insurance still covers you if you do, I'm not sure.
That was actually a big question.
Right. So you would be a chartered section of the NAR, and I think, I need to talk to our lawyer, Tom Rankin, volunteer lawyer, but I think you would be covered, but you would have another liability that you would be responsible for as a corporation. and lawyers could go after that liability, and you'd have to have insurance or not be insured for that liability.
We even discussed getting our own insurance.
Yeah, I think probably 10% of our sections are in fact incorporated, some of them for that purpose, and some for purposes of recognition as a 501c3 nonprofit for fundraising purposes. Mm-hmm. So there are a significant number of NAR sections who are in fact already incorporated. We don't know who they are, but I do hear about them from time to time.
Okay.
So it is being done.
Rules are different.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Right. Okay.
How about the black field losing their high power certification? Is that going to be for our members who have dropped out for a few years already? Is that going to be retroactively applied?
Yeah.
Well?
Yeah. Come on back.
Okay.
Right.
So NLU HPR fire.
Come on back. Now, we don't grant NAR high power certification restoral if you show us a Tripoli card that has your old Tripoli level 2. That's a personal problem. But if you have an NAR card that says you were previously high power level whatever and you want to come on back, we will restore that certification. You're going to have to prove it to us with a copy of the card or your certification paperwork, because our it's a long story about our files, but don't go there. It's very laborious for Marie to go find it in files from more than a couple years ago. So please, if you have a copy of the card, it's automatic. If you don't, it's a lot of work, and it may or may not result in success. But we have restored quite a number of high power certifications on that basis already. So it's a good thing. Okay, Bill.
Any feeling of a number of people who rejoined because of that.
No. We have a significant number of people who rejoin every month for a variety of reasons, and we actually know who they are now. So it's a good thought to go ask them what was it that caused you to come back, because we actually can find who they are, but we haven't actually done that. Finding who they are, while it's technically feasible to do, is not easy to do, but we could do it. Good thought. Good thought. I'm not going to say the words that cost me a quarter. Okay, Bob. All right, one more.
Let everybody else go.
Yeah.
Like many sections, we are a mix of NAR members and non-NAR members.
Right.
And at least for adults, one of the biggest obstacles in converting them to NAR membership is that $62 membership fee. Right. It's great that the organization is in great financial shape now. Is there anything we could do to incentivize new members to join by reducing that number, either for the initial year or for longer than that?
We haven't raised our dues in 10 years. What other organization in America can say that? Right? So I'm not feeling bad. If we've been progressively raising our dues over the past several years, I would give a different and a very direct answer. We haven't done it in over 10 years. Postage has gone up. Everything's gone up. So I don't feel too bad about the fact that they are what they are. But it's certainly, if we have a surge to 6,000 or 7,000 members, okay. There are a couple things that we are counting on volunteers to do now that we really ought to professionalize. Once we're past that point, you can start having that discussion. I think we need to grow a little bigger than we are before we start being in a place where we should have that kind of discussion. And it would be wonderful to be in that place. So, okay, just one or two more, because I've kept people way too long.
Just coming off of the Bob's thing, is $62 for the cost of this hobby. $52
is
a drop in the bucket. We'll be going up on the range.
So what are your Tripoli dues and what do you get for them? I'll leave it at that.
Here's a quarterback.
Yeah, okay. So we are a much better value, let me put it that way, in terms of what we actually deliver, which includes a magazine which is actually published. Okay.
I guess I got to go home and do that.
Bill, one more.
Has there been a lot of discussion either among people informally or online about increasing the participation in things like NARA? Would it be worthwhile to have a survey of all participants afterwards
saying why we came, when we're going to go back, when we're going to not come back?
Well, the survey we ought to do is the people who didn't come. The other 5,300 members of the NAR, why didn't you come? And what would we have to do to make you come? We've had a lot of discussions about that within the board already. Mm-hmm. We need to do something different, people.
Since we're about to do the survey now,
yeah.
I'd like to say more.
Survey Monkey is a wonderful thing. The NAR's account on Survey Monkey has been one of the best investments that we have made. And every time we thought that we needed member feedback on an issue or from some subset of the members, we've done a survey or a targeted survey, and we get the feedback and we do something with it. So it's simply a question of taking the time to create the survey and find the right audience. But that's clearly a subject that has concerned the board because NARAMs are gradually creeping down in size, even though the organization is getting bigger. Something's not right here. Okay, let's wrap this up. So what can you do? My exhortation to all of you as I complete my time up here on the podium and preaching to the membership is to fly safely and to make sure that you take responsibility to keep the people around you doing the same. Don't just watch something that's not safe happen. Intervene and say, that's not safe. We shouldn't do that. You're putting our hobby and our organization at risk. Knock it off. Don't let unsafe things happen and don't be passive about it. We need you to go out and recruit. We need to recruit members. We need to recruit people to do high power. We need to recruit people to do competition. And we need to recruit people to write articles for Sport Rocketry magazine. This is not a spectator sport. Making our organization excellent takes involvement by people who are committed to the organization. And the thing I really like about NARAM, other than the competition, is the fact that the people who are here are committed to the organization. These are the most committed members that we have, which is why NARAM is so important to the organization, because you are the committed. Or you should be committed, is that the way it goes? But I share in your insanity and I love it. But I love this organization and certainly you are the people that I'm most comfortable with, and I ask you to please help us make this organization grow. Take your turn volunteering, whether it's at your local level to give the guy a relief who is your section president or whatever job, hauling iron, getting your launch equipment set up, and the guy does it every time. Somebody else lend a hand, or you're going to burn out those key volunteers. We need a constant turnover of fresh volunteers. We need community outreach to schools, to youth groups, to the public at large, to help them understand just how valuable this hobby is as an educational tool, as a recreational tool. We're safe. Our record proves it. We should be proud of the fact that we are. So, be safe, pay forward, and have fun. So at that point, I would like to change back to the official mode and see if there is any official business that should be brought before the association tonight. Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to adjourn the association meeting.
Excuse me. No. I believe you. Thank you, sir. Tripp sort of messed up the game plan a little bit because he has to leave early. He can't stay for the dinner. So we're going to have to do some things that we weren't going to quite do quite yet, but we'll get through this. There are very few people in the history of NAR that has made as much of an impression on NAR, made as much of a difference for NAR as Tripp Barber. Agree? The trustees have had a bit of a meeting. It was almost a mutiny, but not quite.
This is the plaque. We'll show it to Tripp in a minute.
This is the G. Harry Stein Lifetime Achievement Award, presented to Tripp Barber by the Board of Trustees of the National Association of Rocketry in appreciation of nearly 50 years of outstanding service. For those of you who have not served in the Navy, this is Bravo Zulu, which is well done. In naval speak, it's the new Trip Barber Memorial. So welcome to the club, the small club of four people who have received this award in the history. Well, five. Because Vernon and Glita got it both at the same time. Has received this award in the history of the NAR, and thank you very much for your job. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you all.
I would entertain a motion to adjourn. All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Party. That's not my problem.